welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have another great show for all of you today. My guest will be Richard Schwartz, PhD. He is the past president of Jewish Veg and author of a new book called Vegan Revolution, Saving the World, Revitalizing Judaism. And he was a guest on my show a few years back, and I am so happy to be inviting him on again to talk about his latest book. But before he comes on, I want to share with you all some things going on in and around the news, some ways you can take action, and of course, share my weekly recipe with all of you. So first off, I was sitting in front of my computer the other night trying to write my newsletter, and, you know, the topic of in the news was just the same old, same old. And I'm sure all of us are feeling the same with this election right around the corner and the pandemic still with us. It just seems like we're, you know, being bombarded with the same news day after day after day. The election has so many of us on edge. This past weekend, I was so happy to take part of the Women's March. I did not go to Washington, D.C., as I had originally planned, just because we had so many things to take care of here at our homestead, including my garden. But I did go to Brooklyn, and I went with my daughter and sister, and we had an awesome time. It was just a great, great crowd. And I have to tell all of you, and I've talked about this before, that when you're feeling down about the condition of the world, there is nothing like surrounding yourself with other activists. It really helps replenish you and fill your vessel with hope and determination. And it was just wonderful to be surrounded by not just women, but women, children, men, all colors, all races. It was just a wonderful group in Brooklyn. We got, cheered on by car honkings as we marched and closed down Flatbush Ave. And we marched from Grand Army Plaza all the way to the Brooklyn Courthouse. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful day. Of course, the weather was gorgeous. Originally, they had been calling for rain, so it was a wonderfully pleasant surprise to have a beautiful day. And I have to just encourage all of you to get out there and become activists. It is such a fulfilling act. The Women's March is over, but one thing I did write about that you all can do is join a phone bank or a texting bank. There are so many organizations that are helping, you know, in the last week and a half before the actual election. You can connect with People's Action. You can connect with Grassroots Democrats, Swing Left. I put a bunch of different links on my website in my newsletter under Take Action if you want to get those links. But phone banking is something you can do right from the comfort of your own home. You can also text. And these phone banks were reaching out to undecided voters in swing states. And I know right now the polls are showing Biden is winning, and that's great news, but we can't let up our pressure. We have been here before, and we have been disappointed. And so it's important that we all do whatever we can. If you know anyone that is contemplating whether to vote or not, please encourage them to go out and vote. It is just, you know, our responsibility as Americans, and it is just really, really important. So that's a way that you can all take action. The debate is coming up tonight. I don't know that we'll get any new information. I've heard that they are going to be muting the microphones of the candidates when they're not talking. So that is one benefit. We actually might be able to hear Vice President Biden when he's talking and Trump is trying to talk over him. So, we're also gearing up for another long winter. I mean, the pandemic is, you know, raging around us. It's really, you know, starting to peak again. and we were warned about this wave, and so winter is going to be a long winter. We're getting heat lamps set up outside so we can hang out outside around the table with the heat lamp, around the fire pit. So set that up now while the weather is still nice and get ready to spend a lot of time this winter bundled up and outdoors with your family and friends. Otherwise, you won't get to see them. And I wanted to share with all of you that I have made the difficult decision, although it wasn't a difficult decision in light of the pandemic, but the decision to not move ahead this year with cooking for the homeless. Every year for the past 25 years, I have done a huge cook-a-thon with volunteers coming through the IE Green Homestead and helping me cook turkeys and a full homemade Thanksgiving meal, including tofu with mushroom gravy for those that are vegans and vegetarians on the line. But this year, due to the pandemic, it is not safe to have everybody in my house cooking, nor is it safe to serve everybody out on the streets. So this year will go down in history as the year that we skipped. And like so many events, they are, you know, moving ahead in a different way. We will still be collecting turkeys because the River Fund New York, the nonprofit food pantry that we partner with to do the Thanksgiving feast, they still will be handing out and distributing 4,000 turkeys. They hope to collect 4,000 turkeys. So if anybody has access to a turkey to donate, IE Green will be collecting turkeys the Sunday and Monday before Thanksgiving. A lot of turkeys we get are frozen, so we need time for those turkeys to be able to defrost before people cook them up on Thursday. Obviously, these turkeys can only go to people who actually have a home to cook a turkey in because so many of the people that we normally are feeding are homeless and don't have a home. So those turkeys will not help them. And hopefully a lot of the food banks and food pantries will be figuring out ways of actually serving meals and getting meals to those people, since we will not be filling that gap this year. We also will be collecting coats and warm winter clothing and blankets and sleeping bags. So those can be dropped off at any time at the IE Green Homestead. So for more information, you can send me an email at Bhavani, Bhavani, at iegreen.com. And I'd be happy to answer those questions for you. What else? I want to, also right now as we speak, the Judiciary Committee is confirming or moving ahead with their vote on Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court. And all the Democrats have boycotted the vote, and however, they are still moving ahead, and it will be going to the Senate floor on Monday. So that is really a super depressing move. It doesn't seem like there's any way to stop it, and it is just horrifying to think that our federal Supreme Court now will have a 6-3 conservative lean, thanks to President Trump. Ugh, what can we do? It's really, really just so sad. Okay, I will now want to share with you my recipe. This recipe is actually a breakfast recipe, and I don't share breakfast items very often. This is a multi-grain blueberry pancake recipe. It's vegan. I did not make it gluten-free, but you can certainly substitute gluten-free flour for the unbleached white flour and the whole wheat flour that I have in this recipe. And my husband and I have been doing the intermittent fasting, so we have not really been eating breakfast. So on the weekend, every once in a while, it's fun to, instead of have lunch, to actually have a brunchy breakfast meal. So I made this last weekend, and it was just delicious. So these are multigrain blueberry pancakes. I also did some with banana. Feel free to put any fruit in there that you would like. So you start with a half a cup of unbleached organic white flour, a quarter cup of whole wheat organic flour, and I'm emphasizing organic because right now in this country, the flour that is grown, if it's not organic, it is sprayed with Roundup before harvesting. That helps the wheat dry quicker. And many people who are having wheat allergies, I believe, are really allergic to the Roundup, not so much to the gluten. So it's really important to get organic wheat so that you are not eating the Roundup. So anyway, you also need a half a cup of oats that you're going to grind up in the food processor, a quarter cup of masa harina or cornmeal. Masa harina is basically cornmeal with a little bit of lime in there. And I didn't have cornmeal, so I used my masa harina, and it worked just perfectly. Half a cup of finely chopped walnuts. So it's almost like a flour, but you don't want to blend it so it becomes a butter. So just till it's very finely chopped. 2 teaspoons baking powder, 1 teaspoon baking soda, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 2 tablespoons maple syrup, 1 tablespoon ground flaxseed, and 1 tablespoon of chia seeds, 1 tablespoon apple cider vinegar. You need 1/2 cup of oat milk or another milk substitute, and also another cup of oat milk or milk alternative. 2 tablespoons oil, canola or coconut oil, or any other light oil that you like. 1 teaspoon of vanilla, 1/4 cup of water, some spray oil, a canola oil or safflower oil is good, and then blueberries and bananas. So I started by, in a small bowl, I combined the ground flaxseed and the chia seeds with 1/2 cup of oat milk. And I let that sit for 5 minutes while I worked on the rest of the recipe. And the flaxseed and the chia seeds kind of expand and become glutinous, and they act as my egg in this recipe. In another bowl, I'm combining all of the dry ingredients. And then in another bowl, I'm combining all of the wet ingredients. Once I've combined all the wet ingredients, I'm going to add the flaxseed mixture into the bowl with the wet ingredients and mix that up. Then you're going to add the wet ingredients to the dry ingredients and mix that up just until it's mixed. You don't want to overmix it. You can add the berries and the banana to berries or banana, or you can actually also add the berries once you've put it onto the griddle, the batter onto the griddle, if you want to do it that way. And you're going to spray a griddle or cast iron pan with oil. And I used 1/4 cup measuring spoon. You can use a ladle or whatever you have. And pour out the batter onto the griddle once it's hot. And you let the batter sit on the griddle until you see the edges start drying up and little bubbles appearing in the batter. That's how you know it's ready to be turned. Then you flip the pancakes over with a spatula. And cook the other side for 1 or 2 minutes. And then you're going to serve it with some real maple syrup that you can warm up. And I use some Miyoko vegan butter. Miyoko company makes some really wonderful vegan cheeses. I bought her cheese book, and that's the cheese book that I use for making my vegan cashew goat cheese. Really great. But anyway, they have a vegan butter that's delicious, so you can serve it with that, or you don't need anything and just use the maple syrup. But either way, they were just delicious, and so I really encourage you all to check that out. And now it is my pleasure to introduce to all of you Richard Schwartz. He is the past president of Jewish Veg. And his new book is called Vegan Revolution, Saving the World, Revitalizing Judaism. And Richard's been promoting a vegan diet for most of his adult life and is passionate about sharing his knowledge on the connection of our food system with global warming, our health, and Jewish doctrine. His other books include Judaism and Veganism, Judaism and Global Survival, Mathematics and Global Survival, and Who Stole My Religion? Revitalizing Judaism and Applying Jewish Values to Help Heal Our Imperiled Planet. He's also the author of over 250 articles on the website jewishveg.org. And it's really my pleasure to introduce him to all of you again. Richard, are you with me?
Oh, hi. Thank you for having me on the program. And kudos for so many years of activism on vegetarianism, veganism, and also what you're doing to hopefully have a big, big victory for Biden. I've been working on that here. You know, I've been here in Israel for 4 years, sending a lot of letters. And just last week or so, I sent 2 articles to the Jewish media being in Israel, focusing more on the Jews. Right? One article was why Jews should vote for Biden. And the other one is entitled Climate Change, the Overlooked Issue That Should Defeat Donald Trump. So I join you in hoping for a big victory on November 3rd.
Thank you. Thank you. So, Richard, I thought you maybe before we get started in with your book and all of that, maybe you could share with my listeners a little bit about your history. What inspired you to become vegan? When did you become vegan? What inspired you? And you can share some of info with us.
Okay. Actually, it started, I was teaching a mathematics course at the College of Staten Island for liberal arts non-science students. You know, they were going for music or the arts and didn't care very much about math. They were poorly prepared, poorly motivated. But they had to take this one course to meet a degree requirement, you know, so they have a broad background. And after a while, I came up with the idea to try to motivate them. I created a course called Mathematics in the Environment, the first time that was ever given. There was no book on it. I used a newspaper and whatever I could find and background with graphs and charts and everything. And actually, I wrote 3 or 4 editions of a book called Judaism and Global Survival. Anyway, we tried to tie it in with world news, and 1 year there was an emphasis, a UN special meeting, etc., on hunger. And I thought, millions are dying. What can we do? There's just too many people, not enough food. And then I read a book you're probably familiar with called Diet for a Small Planet by Frances Morrow Pei. And she pointed out how wasteful the animal-based diets are while millions are starving, and now about 10% of the world's people are chronically undernourished. 70% of the grain produced in the U.S. being fed to animals to fatten them up. So we have discussions with the students. I'd say, you know, if people ate less meat, then that would be part of solving the hunger problem. And after a semester or two of doing that, I took my own advice and slowly but surely gave up cold cuts and red meat and chicken and fish. So actually, I first became a vegetarian about 1978. It took me a while, but in 2000, I became a vegan. When I became more aware of how horribly, horribly egg-laying hens and dairy cows are treated. And I've always felt that Judaism has messages to the world, and there were many good books on vegetarianism in general. I decided to write a book, as you mentioned before, called Actually Judaism and Vegetarianism. And the more I found out about the epidemic of disease affecting Jewish and other communities, and especially now that climate change is such a big, big issue, then I've been pushing it. And thank you, you mentioned my book. It's not just a book. It's like a cause, a campaign. I'm doing everything possible. So I'm really very grateful for giving me the opportunity to spread the word a little bit. Thank you.
Sure. Well, you know, Diet for a Small Planet and Frances Morrow Lapte was my inspiration as well. You know, I was 16 when I read that book and never had meat from that day forward. You know, it just converted me. And then I also, you know, took a while before becoming vegan. You know, I've gone in and out of, you know, how much dairy and whatever dairy or occasionally I would eat fish. Anyway, you know, I'm now also vegan and really feeling just so good about it. You know, it just really puts your ethical and moral belief system into action. And so.
Oh, absolutely. And so many advantages in terms of our own health, in terms of not mistreating animals, and certainly in terms of the environment, as I said, and climate change. And as I mentioned, the scandal of world hunger, that there's enough food in the world for far more than enough. I think in Frances Morrow Pei and the other books, they point that out. You know, there was so much fed to animals. And I also try to point out, it makes it even more of a scandal, for feeding 70% of the grain to animals, we take very healthy foods like corn and oats and soy, which are very high in fiber and complex carbohydrates, devoid of saturated fat and cholesterol. We feed them to animals and get just the opposite. So, you know, I say more and more that animal-based diets is really madness and sheer insanity, because we could reduce...
But unfortunately, the grain that we're feeding to most of the industrialized animals is also filled with pesticides and herbicides and chemicals. Right. So, you know, that's not grain that I would want anybody to be eating anyway. So we need to clean that up as well, of course. And I know you know that.
And in addition, of course, in the process, we need far, far more water. That's becoming increasingly scarce. Far more energy, of course, far more land. It's just incredible that the case for vegetarianism and even more so veganism is so super strong. And what makes it even more so is that there are so many super nutritious, delicious plant-based substitutes nowadays. You know, some have the texture and taste so close to the animal-based beef and hamburgers and stuff that people who have eaten meat for decades can't tell the difference between the plant-based burger, say, and an animal-based burger. So we've got to get that message out, because the future of the world depends on it.
Yeah. Now, you talk about a vegan revolution. Is this something that you want to create, or do you think a vegan revolution is already happening?
Okay, actually, it's a little bit of both in a way. Matter of fact, just today, it seems, I think it's November 2nd, is World Vegan Day. And just today, I got some freelance writer. There's a publication online here called Israel21C. Anyway, she had an article called Why Israelis Are Leading the Vegan Revolution. So, to a certain extent, started here in Israel. It's the world capital of veganism. It's only 5% of vegans, but evidently it's higher than other countries. And as I mentioned, more and more there's the vegan substitutes happening, and especially among the young people that are moving in that direction. So it's like the beginning, but part of it also is that it's got to become expanded tremendously. It's becoming yet to come to the future. There's got to be a vegan revolution, because, as you know, I'm sure, that not only animal-based diets wasteful and contributing to hunger, major contributor to climate change. And in 2006, wasn't the Sierra Club, wasn't PETA, People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, but the UN Food and Agricultural Organization issued a report called Livestock Falling Shadow, and they pointed out to me an amazing thing, that the animal-based agriculture emits more greenhouse gases in CO2, carbon dioxide equivalents, than all the cars, planes, trains, ships, all the means of transportation worldwide combined. So if we're going to have a chance of averting a climate catastrophe, and we see evidence of it more and more with the wildfires in California and more storms, more severe storms, there's got to be a major shift. There's got to be a vegan revolution if we have a chance to leave a decent world for future generations.
Yeah. You know, that's one of the things that I really would have loved to see brought up a little bit more in some of these presidential debates. I mean, I think warming and our food system has to be, you know, in the forefront and on the table when we're talking about politics, and it's just not there enough.
Well, like I said, I just sent an article a few days ago to the Jewish media, climate change, the generally overlooked issue that should defeat Donald Trump, because I don't know if there's ever been more of a gap between the reality and the view of the president. Not only is he in denial, and just about all the Republican parties in denial of climate change, they've been trying to roll back or weaken, I think, something like 150 pieces of legislation designed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So that should be more of an issue, and it has come up a bit. I remember in the vice presidential debate, Pence was asked about it. He said, climate is changing. We're looking at the science, and then he shifted right away to another issue. I mean, it's That should be more an issue. And thank God the Democrats have strong programs, proposals for it, and hopefully it'll make a big difference.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, your book, part of your book's title is Saving the World. Can you elaborate on how you see the connection of veganism and the vegan revolution being a part of saving the world?
Right. Okay. The first important point is that the world definitely needs saving. I mean, we are on a path toward, like, almost the end of humanity. The temperature has gone up like 1.1 degrees Celsius, about 2 degrees Fahrenheit since pre-industrial age. And even if all the pledges made, there was a Paris conference in 2015, 195 countries, just about every country in the world, agreed that climate change is a big problem, has to be addressed. Most of them made pledges. So they said we're up 1.1 degrees Celsius. But even if every pledge was kept 100%, and that's very unlikely, they're way behind, it would go up not by the 1.1 at this point, but by a total of three, a tripling. And when you look at the TV and see what we see about the wildfires in California, so severe that the air quality there in California was like four times worse than the most polluted cities in China. And all the floods that are hitting the Gulf Coast and all that. So anyway, step one, the world has to be saved. And the thing is that, of course, everything possible has to be done, you know, the recycling, get more efficient cars. We certainly have to move toward solar and wind power. But the one often overlooked issue is that, again, animal-based diets, largely because of the belching of the cows and other animals, giving off methane, very potent greenhouse gas, only in the atmosphere for about 20 years, very short half-life. But during those 20 years, it's about 84 times as potent as carbon dioxide and heat in the atmosphere. So if there was a major shift of veganism, far less cows and other animals giving off that methane, that can make a difference. It's not sufficient, many other things, but without it, I think it's very unlikely, if not impossible, that we're just going to have more and more of the world warming up. And oh, by the way, this year may be the hottest year in history. It's certainly going to be among the top two or three. And every single year in this century, 20 years, is in the top 21 hottest year. So it's getting hotter. It's going to get even more hotter and drier. I just saw something about the majority of safe areas in the U.S. in a drought right now. So it's just essential, and I hope everybody listening here will make it a priority to speak to your religious leaders, educators, write letters to the editor, talk it up among your family, friends, coworkers, neighbors. If we don't solve this climate change threat, it's hard to see how we're going to leave a decent world for future generations.
Mm-hmm. And from your studies on Judaism, can you share with us what about Judaism supports being a vegan, and why do you focus on Jews becoming vegans as opposed to just everybody? One of the things, very often, I work with my synagogue on many social issues, but when it comes to feeding the homeless, I'm not into feeding just Jewish homeless. I'm into feeding everybody. Mm-hmm. So, but you focus really on Jewish population. Can you share with us?
Okay. A couple of things. Well, first of all, in addition to my being now president emeritus of Jewish Veg, and I was president for many years before that of Jewish Veg in North America, that was his original name, I'm also president of a group called the Society of Ethical and Religious Vegetarians. So I am involved with others as well. I mentioned before, when I first became a vegetarian, I wanted to get the message out. I saw that there were many very good books on vegetarianism. I didn't want to sort of repeat what others had done. There was nothing on Judaism, so I tried to, and I ended up writing a book on that. So I certainly hope to go beyond, but because there wasn't anything on Judaism that really says focus on that. Now, the other point is, what in Judaism points to veganism? Well, I try to stress the six very powerful fundamental Jewish mandates that point to veganism as the ideal diet. And by the way, this is true of other religions. You know, every religion is based on compassion, working for justice, sharing, you know, loving thy neighbor as thyself. So it's all related to the matter of fact, when I first wrote Judaism and Vegetarianism, I was at conferences with others who had written books on vegetarianism, and I pushed them, one who had a chapter on Christianity and vegetarianism, to write a whole book on it. And at first, they didn't think they could make the case, but since then, God hasn't written on it. Anyway, there are six basic Jewish teachings, and again, from Muslim religions as well. And these are to take care of our health, to treat animals with compassion, to protect the environment, to conserve natural resources, to help hungry people, and to seek and pursue peace. And just briefly on each of them, in terms of protecting our health, in Judaism, there's 613 mitzvot or commandments, and only one of them has the word "very" in it. So the nishmatem mi'od, or "very," the nishmatem mi'od nafshu tehem, to diligently guard our health. And also, 610 of the 613 can be overridden and not applied if a life is in danger. That is far, far more important than that. And in terms of compassion for animals, Jews are supposed to be what's called Rachmanim B'nai Rachmanim, compassionate children of compassionate ancestors. We have to emulate a God whose compassion is over all of his works, all of his creatures. That's in Psalms 145-9. In the Ten Commandments, it indicates that not only are people to observe the Sabbath day, but animals as well. Jews are not to sit down for a meal until they make sure if they have a pet or a farmed animal that that animal has been fed first. So there's very strong teachings on that. And in terms of the environment, it says that the human being was put in the Garden of Eden to work the land, but also to guard it. So we are to be guardians of the earth, co-workers in God, and protecting the environment. In terms of conserving resources, there's a very powerful teaching in Deuteronomy chapter 20, verses 19 and 20, that says, even in warfare, you know, in warfare you think you have to win that war, anything goes, but the Torah in Deuteronomy teaches you shall not destroy fruit-bearing trees, even in wartime, to build a battering ram to try to overcome an enemy fortification. And the sages took that very specific law that you can't use an axe on trees in wartime, to destroy trees in wartime. And they made a general prohibition called Bal Tashchi, thou shalt not waste or necessarily destroy anything of value. So all of these teachings in Judaism on one hand and the realities on the other hand are far, far from that. And again, helping the hungry, in biblical times of farmers, each farmer was supposed to leave a corner of the field for the hungry. And on Yom Kippur, a holiest day, the prophecy of Isaiah says, what is the real purpose of hunger? To end oppression and to share thy bread with the poor and the needy. In terms of seeking and pursuing peace, well, Judaism is not a pacifistic religion, but it has this prophetic vision that the nations shall beat their swords and plowshares, their spears and their pruning hooks. And the Jewish sages saw that the Hebrew words lechem and milchama, which is bread and war, come from the same root. They deduced from that when there's a shortage of grain and other resources, people are more likely to go to war. And history has shown that in biblical days, battles over water, more recently over oil. So I came up with a bit of a pun. It says, the slogan of the peace movement and of the vegan movement, same slogan, peace movement, vegan movement, should be one and the same. All we're saying is give peas a chance. So hopefully this is a summary of, I can go much more detail, and of course I do in the book, this present book and ones before on that. And again, in every religion, if it's based on compassion, people should know how horribly animals are raised on factory farms and really shift to veganism, but it's all positive, and have to break through the apathy and the denial and the resistance and the ignorance. So if you want more info on any of these, be happy to get it. And if anybody wants to contact me, my email address is veggierich@gmail.com. That's V-E-G-G-I-E, and then the first four letters of my name, rich@gmail.com.
Thank you. We're going to take a couple-minute break. When we come back, I actually would like to talk to you a little bit about kosher meat, because I know people that I've talked to, you know, they say, well, kosher meat is, you know, is uttered in compassion. But then at the same time, you know, my understanding is kosher meat is still factory meat. It's just, you know, it's just being done in a different way. So maybe we could talk a little bit about that. Everyone who's with us, don't go away. We're going to take a couple-minute break, but my guest is Richard Schwartz, author of Vegan Revolution, Saving the World, Revitalizing Judaism. Be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green. And if you're just joining us, my guest today is Richard Schwartz. He is the author of Vegan Revolution, Saving the World, Revitalizing Judaism. And right before the break, I was asking him to talk to us a little bit about kosher meat, because kosher meat is touted as being a more compassionate meat, that the animals are not tortured. But that's not actually what I hear is going on. So maybe you could share some of that with us.
Right. Well, the kosher ritual laws were designed to minimize pain, but there's two big problems. One is that at the foot of such mass production, there's so much speed that often it's not followed, even indicating ideally it could minimize pain. And the second major problem is that even if it was carried out at the slaughterhouse, ideally minimal pain, you have to take into account the months of terrible treatment on the factory farms beforehand before it gets to that. Sometimes use the analogy of somebody who's been terrible to a parent, deserted them, is nowhere there, and hears about the parent is about to die and suddenly shows up and wants to do everything for the parent and all. You know, in the final minutes or seconds or whatever, it could be fun. So that is a problem because, again, most of it is on factory farms. Now, another big problem is there have been some scandals in the supervision in the kosher meat industry that assume most of the supervisors are very honest and all, but there's always some. So there have been cases where supervision hasn't been proper, and places where it's supposed to be kosher meat that it wasn't kosher. So ideally, if one really, really wants to be kosher, to increase the chances on that, it's best to have a vegan diet. Because in addition to everything else, you know, one of the big things in the laws of kashrut is the separation of meat and milk. If you're eating meat, somebody's not supposed to eat to consume milk. In some traditions, 3 hours, and more often 6 hours. But when somebody's working in a kitchen and having three meals a day, 365 days a year, year in and year out, there's so many chances for accidentally mixing the meat and milk or something else going wrong. So the bottom line is to really simply be kosher, to be vegan. In addition to everything else, something could be strictly speaking, according to the laws of kashrut or kosher, but that's ignoring all the negative factors. It's at least the six ways that I've mentioned that if somebody thinks, yeah, I'm kosher, but they're eating, they're having a diet that's seriously violating these six mandates I mentioned. Their diet is bad for their health. It's horrible for the animals. It's contributing to climate change and other environmental threats. It's very wasteful. You know, it takes like an animal-based diet as much as 13 times as much water than on a vegan diet. and it provides maybe about 10 times as much energy per person. And also, mentioning again, with so much starvation in the world, it's contributing to hunger, and it's making violence more likely by wasting resources and making it harder for hungry people to get enough food. So, again, if anybody wants to be kosher, go vegan, best way.
Mm-hmm. You know, part of the title of your book is also Revitalizing Judaism. And, you know, I have heard, you know, as a practicing Jew myself, you know, I am more culturally Jewish than actually practicing a lot of Judaism. But you hear that, you know, so many people are leaving religion in general. How do you see a vegan revitalizing Judaism, and why does Judaism need revitalizing?
Right. Well, my previous book, by the way, as you mentioned, is called Who Stole My Religion? And in that book, I argue that Judaism is a radical religion in the best sense of the term radical. And because it's such powerful teachings on justice and peace. By the way, the only two things that Judaism teaches we should pursue are peace and justice. And it has teachings about sharing and compassion. And again, we're supposed to emulate God's compassion, ideally. Abraham, the first Jew, smashed the idols of the society then, even argued with God in terms of possibly saving the evil cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, saying, shall not the justice of all the world act justly, etc. And the biblical prophets were the greatest champions of social justice. And so Judaism has these powerful teachings, but what good are they if they're not put into practice? Again, strong teachings on compassion to animals, and yet probably 95-98% of Jews are not vegans, and maybe 90% or more are not vegetarians. So, and there are, thankfully, some Jewish groups who are involved exploring the climate change and justice in general and helping the poor, and like you're doing, and the hungry. But so much more should be done. You know, there's so much stress on the ritual and not enough on the social justice aspects. And the ritual is designed to motivate people to practice the social justice. So in a world that needs the Jewish teachings more than ever before, they're not being applied. So the idea is, the shift to veganism will help revitalize Judaism.
Yeah. You know, I have, you know, since I was a teenager, you know, I found my spiritual cravings through more Eastern religion. You know, I was attracted to yoga and then led to meditation and then more Eastern religion because it was personal. It was something I could do at home. It was, you know, it was when I went internal and it really calmed me and made me feel, you know, I was part of a larger group of new age young people who all were seekers. And I have to say that probably 80% of these young people were Jewish, you know, Jewish roots. Mm-hmm. And I have found that so many people that have sought out Eastern religion actually are Jewish. And I think part of the problem was Judaism was not satisfying spiritual seekers. You know, the part of Judaism, the Kabbalah that is more spiritual is kept hidden and is not not shared with the congregation. And so why is the spiritual doctrine of the Kabbalah kept hidden? And you know, do you think that if the Kabbalah was more accessible to people, that so many young people would not be leaving the religion and would find more comfort within Judaism?
Right. Of course, not just the Kabbalah, but just in basic Judaism. Like I said, we have these teachings right in the beginning, and there was a misunderstanding. You know, for example, in the first chapter of the Bible, it says that human beings were given dominion. And that's been so misinterpreted. Of course, sages, Jewish sages indicated dominion means responsible stewardship or guardianship. You know, that we're supposed to be guardians, just as a mother is, in effect, a guardian over a baby, and certainly that doesn't mean they can mistreat them and all. So basic Judaism has these teachings, like I said. Tzedek, 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 justice, justice shalt thou pursue. Seek peace and pursue it. Love strangers. 36 times in the Torah, there's an indication that we ought to be kind to the stranger because we were strangers in the land of Egypt. We know what it was like historically to be slaves, and therefore we should have this compassion. You know, unfortunately, is what my favorite rabbi, Abraham Joshua Heschel, calls religious behaviorism, where people are going through the ritual, but somehow it's not affecting their lives. So that's part of the purpose of this book, and as I said, that other book, Who Stole My Religion? What I'm saying is religion, Judaism has the powerful teaching. The biblical prophets spoke out so strongly about when it was injustice and all, you know. So we have that possibility. So we need a revitalization, and I'm hoping my book will be at least part of it. One of the things is I'm trying to start respectful dialogues, not coming in and say it's got to be exactly this way. But these are the issues that should be in the forefront. I mean, the fact that climate change threats is not basic, you know, that being understood. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, a group composed of the leading climate experts from all over the world, indicated that we may have only until 2020 to make what they call, quote unquote, unprecedented changes in order to be able to avert a climate catastrophe. So this should be something that everybody's getting involved in. Thankfully, many young people are, but so much more has to be done.
Yeah. So I know with your book, you're trying to build a major campaign to help promote veganism. Can you talk to us a little bit about this campaign you're trying to build?
Yep, I'm doing everything possible. Again, thanks for having me on this program. I had another interview this past Monday. I'm trying to get reviews, and thankfully some of them are in the process. I'm trying to reach out to every rabbi and respectfully challenge them and say, how can you not be a vegan yourself and make it part of what's being discussed in your congregation when I'm not, God forbid, saying we need a different religion. I'm saying let's put Jewish teachings into practice, the teachings about compassion and justice, seeking peace, loving thy neighbor, helping the stranger, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm just doing everything possible. And again, if listeners have suggestions of possible news sources, how we can get on to other radio programs, podcasts, et cetera. So I'm making this like a super priority. I have lists of rabbis on email. I'm just trying to do everything possible because, again, I've been fortunate. I've been living in Israel for 4 years. And thankfully, I've had 3 grandchildren get married, being a great-grandfather for the first time. So this has given me the incentive even more to work on this because when I see somebody get married, a new child being born, I wonder what kind of future are they going to have unless we address the climate change threats.
Yeah, you're so right. And, you know, that is an issue that is in the forefront of so many young people's minds. I mean, so many people I know are choosing to not even have children because they don't know what kind of world they would be bringing their child into. And when you see so many things out of your control, I mean, as a parent, you want to feel like you have control of protecting your child. And if you can't protect your child from, you know, environmental catastrophes, if you can't protect your child even from, you know, vaccinations, if that's your thing, I mean, you know, so many of our rights are being taken away from us as far as making decisions as a parent. It's a, you know, it's a scary place to bring a child into. And
absolutely.
You know, I think so many people are giving that thought. And, you know, I know when we were doing the Women's March this past weekend, you know, and with this new court decision, you know, the fact that women may be losing their right to choose and that, you know, women are going to start dying again if they choose to end a pregnancy. You know, it's just it's just very scary times. And And I think
that electoral college, that's a big, big problem. You know, the Democrats have had a majority in six of the last seven presidential elections, and yet because of that electoral college, they lost with Bush back in 2000, and they lost now with Trump 2016. So it's essential that the Democrats win this year. If they don't, it's hard. I don't know. The whole democracy is going to be so threatened that pretty terrible, terrible. So,
yeah.
Let's hope.
Absolutely. So, in you've been living in Israel. Can you share with us how have you seen the change in Israel as far as options? Are there more vegan restaurants around? Is vegan becoming, you know, are there more, is it more accessible to get vegan food? How has that changed in Israel?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Turns out, by the way, the president of Israel, it's more of a ceremonial kind of position. He's a vegetarian. The chief of staff of the Israeli army is a vegan. And they say that Israel has the most vegan army in the world in terms of the food, the shoes, the caps that they have, all really vegan. And a number of vegan options, and they're especially marked on the the menus, or et cetera. So things are changing, but still there's so, so much more that has to be done. You know, it's a vegan capital world, but still only 5% are vegans. And the good news is that the young people are moving in that direction. There's more and more understanding there. And so hopefully it'll build. And I'm determined, as you say, I started this campaign that do everything possible, reaching out to everybody I can, sending emails, trying to use Facebook, all I can. And thankfully, momentum is building. I have a really wonderful review in the Jerusalem Report in the next issue, and that's going to really help in promoting things. So, again, anybody in the audience who would want to join this campaign or has suggestions, please feel free to contact me at veggierich at gmail.com.
Now, I will share your link on my website as well. You know, one last comment and question is with veganism, you know, I personally am vegan also for health reasons, but a lot of people are vegan only for the animal compassion reason and really don't connect veganism to their health. I have seen, you know, vegan bakeries with artificial coloring and sprinkles and, you know, and people who go on vegan diets who just eat, you know, white bread and donuts and, you know, like unhealthy food. How are you and what are you doing to try to connect the vegan diet to also being healthy, not just animal free?
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, that's one of the things I stress. And there was a publication here, Healthy Living for Seniors. It came out every couple of months or so here in Israel. I've had like 5 or 6 articles in them. I try to write letters to the editor as much as possible, many on health. And one of the things, I ask the questions, are human beings herbivorous or omnivorous? And I came to the conclusion that really both were herbivorous by nature, but omnivorous in the fact that so many people eat so much meat. And therefore, that's why there's so much disease, life-threatening diseases out there. And also, I'm writing about the fact that I call it a protein myth and a calcium myth. You know, a lot of people feel like, I need the protein, I need the calcium. But the protein myth, because a human mother's milk has only 5% of its calories and maybe 6% of its calories in protein, and that's the time when we're growing the fastest. They did experiments on rats, and of course rats feed at 47% of its calories. That's why the rat's mother's milk has. There's a misconception. And also, the countries that have most osteoporosis are ones like the U.S., Scandinavian countries, Israel, where they get the most dairy products. There's a lot of misconceptions on that. And we've had speakers here, unfortunately, that, you know, have a balanced diet, but it includes eggs and meat and all. So I'm trying to stress that by far the healthiest diets are vegan. And as you know, because like Dean Ornish out in California, he shows you can actually reverse serious heart disease on a vegan diet. And they've shown that type 2 diabetes as well can be reversed on a vegan diet. So I sometimes think it's like medical malpractice today. If doctors don't tell their patients about the health benefits of plant-based vegan diets.
Wouldn't that be great if a doctor was cited for malpractice by not promoting a vegan diet? I love the idea of that. But anyway, we are out of time. Richard, I want to thank you so much for the work you're doing and for spreading the word, because it is a word that needs to be spread. So keep up the great work, and thank you for joining us. And everyone out there, thank you for joining us and for listening. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now. Thank you, Richard.